Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass. And together, a hearty welcome on Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. Today is Super Tuesday, but not a lot of drama on Super Tuesday 2024. But anyway, that's another story. We're in our 14th year with our radio project. We come to you from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media Campus, where we've got five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030. KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and a ton of content, really 13 years of content on my website, buckmastershow.com. So easy to use that. Just put in the name of the person that was interviewed on the program and it will pop up. There's again, 13 years of content there at buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, we'll be doing a couple of those today. That is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today we resume our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College. This series introduces our listeners to the dedicated educators and supporters of Pima Community College, and there are a lot of supporters in this town. Joining us on the live line, our friend Phil Burdick is with us. Phil is the Vice Chancellor for External Relations at PCC. Hey, Phil, how are you?
Hi, Bill. How are you? Nice to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you, Phil. I understand there's some new enrollment numbers, and I want to get right to that at the top of our time together. How are we doing at PCC with enrollment?
Well, we're up about 5.5% this spring from this time last year, which is great news for us. I think overall the college is really rebounding nicely from the pandemic decline that all colleges had back a couple of years ago, and that especially hit community colleges hard. But I think since the pandemic has ended and people are thinking about their careers and what they want for their next step in their careers, they're turning to us increasingly to get kind of affordable, accessible education and not going into debt to do it.
Phil, what was your messaging from you and the team coming out of the pandemic to make this enrollment growth happen? What was the messaging to the greater Tucson community?
Well, that's a great question. So I think the message is, first of all, come back, resume your career training. But the other message, and I think this is really a result of all of the changes that happened during the pandemic, is that we're offering classes in a variety of modalities, online, which is, you know, completely, you know, digital, hybrid, in which students take some online portions of their courses, but then come in a day of the week for some in-person classroom work, or, you know, we still have in-person classes. And so I think since the pandemic, more students, more people are interested and are comfortable learning online. Whereas pre-pandemic, there was a certain percentage that were comfortable with it, but it was a small percentage. Since the pandemic, I think more people are now comfortable learning at home and combining that with classroom, in-person tutoring, but it fits their schedules better since most of our students, 60% of them, almost 70% now are part-time.
Yeah, I want you to give me, if you will, Phil Burdick, the footprint. How many students do you have? What's the total of campuses? And what does that footprint look like here as in 2024?
Well, we'll serve over 35,000 students this year. We have five campuses around the Tucson area, plus some learning centers for some of our programs. So we're a big footprint around Tucson, and we serve a lot of students with a lot of varying needs. Some are simply the traditional transfer students that want to save some money before they go to a university. Others come to us because they want to jump directly into a career, so get a certificate in the trades in which they can get a certificate in a year, very little or no debt, and jump into a really good paying career. And some others want to get their GED or literacy so they can begin their college career. So we serve a lot of different needs, and all of those needs are important for the workforce here in the Tucson area.
One of the very attractive things about Pima Community College to economic developers is that Pima is willing and able to model programs to suit the needs of perhaps incoming businesses. Elaborate a bit on that, Phil Burdick.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So most of our career programs and trade programs, we have advisory panels who look over our curriculum to make sure that it's in sync with what they need right now. We all know that, you know, business and the workforce is changing so much, and their workforce needs are changing so much, and the skills that they need are in constant flux. And so we have to make sure that our curriculum is keeping up with the changes that they're seeing and the changes that they need to make sure they have a highly competitive workforce, because they're competing in a global economy. So we form a lot of partnerships with industries, especially in our trade programs. We also partner really closely with the Sun Corridor. So when they're recruiting businesses here in Tucson, we're part of that recruitment effort, so that new businesses who are considering Southern Arizona know that they have a real partner in community colleges, Pima Community College, to train their workforce. And that's really helped as far as the pitch that we make to attract new businesses here.
Phil Burdick is with us on our live line. Phil is the vice chairman for external relations. There is a search that is going on for a new chancellor at Pima Community College. What is the update, Phil, now on the executive search?
So our board is taking a very careful and measured approach to finding a replacement for a former Chancellor Lee Lambert, who went off to California. California recruited him away from us. And so I think from the board's perspective, they really want community input. We are a community college. We are we're of and for the community. We're funded by the community. And so we want to have, the board has made it clear that they want a lot of community input on the qualities they want in a chancellor. And so they've gone out on some listening sessions to hear what both the college community and the Tucson community at large want to see in a new chancellor for Pima. And so they've gathered that information. They've hired an executive search firm, and they're in the middle of putting together the job description. And I think they'll probably start recruiting candidates probably a bit later on this spring, and hopefully have a short list by the end of the spring, early summer.
I want to talk a little bit about higher education. We've got to do better, don't we, in this state, Phil Burdick?
We really do. So there was an interesting study that just came out by a group called Education Forward Arizona. They're an education advocacy group. They had some really alarming statistics about Arizona. Less than half of the Arizona workforce, that is people aged 25 to 64, have a 2 or 4 year degree or professional license or workforce certificate, less than half.
Mm.
That's troubling for any business that's here already or any business that wants to come here. You know, one of the first questions they ask, besides the weather, is, mm-hmm. you know, whether I'm going to have a skilled workforce, you know, to recruit and make sure that, you know, I'm producing the best products in the world. And, you know, unless they're assured of that, they're going to look elsewhere. And that's a problem that the state has to address. And I think community colleges, especially colleges like Pima, that have robust workforce programs, we have to be part of that solution.
Do you have any thoughts on why this is happening, Phil? What's your own personal take on that report?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Coming out of the pandemic, you know, the job market was really tight, and it was really attractive for students coming right out of high school, you know, to get a pretty good paying job. It's not a family-sustaining type of job, but it is a good job coming out of high school with a robust economy, tight job market. But I think more and more people are realizing that although maybe the starting wage is attractive, they're not going to be able to build a career off of those type of jobs. They're going to need some additional training to really build a career that can help them sustain a family, pay good wages, have good benefits. And so I think what you're seeing now is more and more students post-pandemic realizing that they have to have something more than a high school degree to get a really good job.
Phil Burdick, always a pleasure. Phil is Vice Chancellor for External Relations, Pima Community College, and Pima's got a great website for people that want more information on really the whole spectrum of what they do, and that website is pima.edu. Phil, I hope you have a great day. Thank you very much, sir.
You too. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. Phil Burdick at Pima Community College. Want to talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery. They are open right now. They open Tuesday through Sunday. The doors open at 6:30. They're serving lunch right now. And if you'd like a beer with your lunch or maybe wine, that's available for you now with the liquor license at Mona's. And, of course, some people like what they call a mimosa, the little champagne and orange juice. You could do that with your breakfast. A wide variety of alcoholic beverages now available for you at Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website, which looks really great, pretty much everything on the menu there to tempt you to get up to Mona's. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. It's the Buckmaster Show Tuesday edition. Shelley Fishman will be telephonically joining us right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And joining us now on the live line, Mr. Shelly Fishman. Shelly, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, but I stayed away from the radio station because the market is doing so badly today. I was afraid to show up.
You were afraid to show up. I'll tell you, things kind of went south in the tech area. Facebook had this huge outage. That platform and a lot of, I think there were a couple other Instagram social media platforms. I, along with a lot of people, use Facebook, and I thought, whoa, this is weird. They won't accept my password. I thought I had been hacked. And big outage. And then Apple had some news and that wasn't related to this outage, but still the market is really having a bad day.
Yeah, actually the bond market is doing pretty well.
Oh.
So stocks versus bonds are acting normally today, which isn't always the way they act. But it's just a rotten day on the market. So we'll have to just make it up the rest of the week.
You know, whenever we have these, and of course the presidential election nowadays almost starts right after the inauguration, it seems. But anyway, there's the obvious contrast. People are asked, the media asks folks, are you better off today than you were the last time we had a presidential election? They asked this question in 2019.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because there have been some focus groups done, and what we find out is that people just forget about what it was under Trump. They believe, you know, what their media bubble is telling them, and to another extent, interestingly, if you go back to 2016 when the election was, there's some 30 million voters who were in middle school when Trump was first elected.
Oh.
So, you know, they weren't necessarily keeping track of what goes on. But last night, you know, I just heard a couple of times that repeated question, are you better off today than you were in 2019? Mm. And that's being asked by Republican candidates. And unfortunately, the Democrats they're asking it of don't seem to be prepared.
They're not prepared to talk about the economy, are they, and the good things that have happened in the economy?
Yeah, so somebody asks me that question, you know, sit down and buckle up, because I got about, you know, a half an hour of why it's better today than it was in 2019. That's not to say that Trump was a rotten president for the economy. He wasn't. He was a miserable candidate, you know, a miserable president for the economy, but no worse than other Republicans. The things that have gotten better, well, first of all, you know, to be fair to Trump, we don't count the last year of his presidency because that was the year of COVID.
Yes.
But to be fair, if we're not going to count the last year of the Trump presidency, we really shouldn't count the first year of the Biden presidency.
And but, also, you know, let's point out the fact that something you've brought up many times on this program about who's better off under the economy better off under a Republican or Democrat, and you've done the homework.
Oh yeah, and the numbers are simply better for Democratic administrations, but you know, there's still this troubling problem that the macro economy has measurements, but individuals have perceptions. And for individuals, perception is reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that perception very often is driven by, you know, the last time you went to the grocery store or the last time you filled your tank with gas. And so when you tell people all of the good things that this economy is doing, they kind of scratch their head and, you know, what are you smoking? Now, you know, 50 years ago I might have been smoking something, but I haven't done that recently. And so there is just so many things that I have to point out when people ask that question. And, you know, the number one thing, Bill, is that our economic recovery from the pandemic is the envy of the industrialized world. We're simply outperforming everybody else. Now, the pandemic didn't just affect us. Inflation didn't just affect us. You know, lots of job losses and people being sequestered in their homes and out of work and school didn't just affect us. But we've recovered from it better than virtually everybody else. And then we surpass it so that our GDP growth for this year, this past year, 2023, is among the best since the Clinton years. And the forecasts for 2024 are even better. You know, we're seeing forecasts that GDP growth is going to be in the 3.5 to 4% range. We've gotten used to 1.5 to 2%. Inflation, you know, the price of things that have gone up aren't going to come down, but the inflation targets are now very close to being met. The Fed has done a good job without increasing unemployment. In fact, we have full employment right now. You know, our unemployment rate is in the mid-threes. We haven't seen that forever.
Well, one of the things that people point to is that, it goes back to your perception. And the Biden administration really hasn't sold these numbers like you've just been articulating, these three very important points. I don't know why.
And shame on them.
Yeah. But go ahead with some of these other points.
You know, what's frustrating is that, you know, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or you're a Biden fan or a Trump fan, you should have the correct facts in your head. Because not having the correct facts in your head leads you to make decisions that may be counter to your own self-interest.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of thing that just kind of strikes me as bizarrely unfortunate. One of the biggest bugaboos right now. I'm trying to keep my language clean. bugaboos in the political world, you know, has to do with immigration. Now, do we have immigration that seems to be out of control? Yeah, we do. Are the borders not being protected properly? That's probably the case. We just don't have anywhere near the personnel on the borders that we need to have. And I've said this a couple of times on the show already, the Congressional Budget Office just added $7 trillion. Trillion with a T, to gross national product growth over the next decade because of immigration.
And immigrants spending money in this country.
And taking jobs that native-born Americans just
don't want.
And, by the way, despite what you might hear even from the Trump himself, when you take a look at statistics for crime committed by various ethnic and other groups, the immigrant population crime rate is well below the native-born U.S. crime rate. So, you know, do I believe that there's probably some people coming into this country who shouldn't be coming in here and need to get out of here real quick? I do. But do I think that characterizes the whole issue of immigration? I don't. And I really do think that it needs to be articulated in such a way that this as a welcoming country for immigrants, because it's in our own self-interest, needs to be talked about more.
Yeah, and Shelley, before we wrap this up, got about 2 minutes with you, that we haven't really talked about creation of new jobs in this country in the last 3 years.
Well, you know, we've had 12 million new jobs under the Biden administration, which is more than twice what we normally get in a full 4-year term, regardless of who the president is. Now, some of that is because we had fallen pretty low as a result of the pandemic. But 12 million new jobs, even today, when we've passed the curve, when you draw out what the growth picture for jobs would have been, we've now surpassed what it would have been. And even today, we have 2 jobs available for everybody looking for a job. That is full employment. And these are higher paying jobs, because guess who's taking the ones that are the lowest paying jobs? the immigrant population. And they spend money and they drive prices down. Now, they can drive prices down too much. It's not all a rosy picture. We've got to get immigration under control. But what we're seeing is an economy that, and you know, your guest earlier began to talk about the fact that it's important that we have a fully educated workforce. He talked about college degrees, but I would also talk about academic, you know, non-academic training, just technical training and job training, and especially in this high-tech environment. Right now, we can't fill these jobs.
That's true.
And we need to be able to fill them with skilled people.
Yeah,
we need, you know, we need a national service corps, and we need free community college and job training for people. And those two things, by the way, are inextricably linked together.
And before we wrap it up, by the way, the markets have done pretty darn well over the last 3 years. If you've got a retirement account, you've done pretty well, or any investment.
If you left it alone,
yeah,
you've done very, very well. If you, you know, dinked with it, not so much.
Hey, Shelley, I hope you have a great rest of the day. We'll see you in studio, I hope, next week.
You bet. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Shelley Fishman.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We love Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. We have had a very pleasant spring. We've had some good rain, not too hot, not too cold, perfect weather to do some spring gardening. So get over to Green Things. Their website's greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business on site is zocalovillage.com. For our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Pima County Attorney Laura Conover will have a challenger in the Democratic primary, and that primary is really early this year. Normally it's August. I think it's now been pushed up to July 30th for the Arizona primary. The challenger is Mike Jetty. Mike resigned from the U.S. Attorney's Office at the start of 2024 after returning from a 2.5-year assignment in Pakistan. And Mike joins us now in studio. Mike, how are you, sir?
Good. Thank you, Bill, for inviting me on.
So tell me about why this run to go up against Laura Conover. What's at the heart of this campaign, Mike?
Well, two issues. One is when I came back from Pakistan, it was seeing crime and seeing the impact that crime has on the community. And two is the impact it has on certain victims. You're talking about victims of sexual assault, victims of homicide, victims of criminal trespass. We're talking to the business community. Mm-hmm. We're talking about organized retail theft. So in this entire framework here, we've got a lot of victims whose voice isn't being heard. And I've been a career prosecutor and representing victims and trying to give them voice in my entire career. And I said, this is an opportunity for me to use my skill set to reestablish this focus here at the county attorney's office and gear it and pivot back to victim advocacy and make sure victims get a voice in the system.
Did a group of people come to you, Mike, and say, we'd like you to run? Is that kind of how the genesis of this?
I think it was from both frames. So people who know me encouraged me to consider it. And mm-hmm. then part of that is also my own want to do something with my own community. I've got a forward-leaning attitude. My attitude is do what I can. I grew up in a Marine Corps house, and that my values are to do the best I can for the community, leave it in a better spot than I took it in. So when I came back, it was not the best spot. Pima County and Tucson itself were being materially impacted by the policies in the county attorney's office. And so it made me want to say, I'm a forward lean into this. I'm a jump in.
Is Laura Conover, in your opinion, then not tough enough on crime, Mike Jetty?
I know
that's kind of a cliche, that tough on crime, but it's kind of a campaign slogan. But what is she not doing that you would like to correct right off the bat if you were elected?
I like to bifurcate that statement, because tough on crime means like sentencing. And I think I'm, when you look at tough on crime, people think how many years in DOC and what's the punishment. I think we need to come at that angle with compassion for a defendant, because defendants sometimes don't come from the same starting lineup as we do. Mm-hmm. They start behind the starting line. Mm-hmm. But my job, first and foremost, is to hold them accountable first. And so if you burglarize a home, you rob somebody, I need to hold you accountable. And then as we progress through the system, how we treat you and how we try to rehabilitate you, how do we punish you, whatever the goal is here, you do it with compassion and understanding where the defendant comes from. Some defendants are really bad people, but the majority of people, you can fashion a sentence that's appropriate for both the victim, the community, and the defendant. So being tough on crime, I think we need to bifurcate that. My job is to hold everyone who commits a crime accountable. And then from there, how we treat them, we treat them with compassion.
Both you and Ms. Conover are Democrats, so you're coming at this. There are some general similarities, I would think, in kind of social reform. Would that be correct? Social justice reform.
Well, absolutely. I'm 100%. This is not a put a square peg in a square hole, kind of a round hole. This is there's different ways of addressing crime in Pima County across the country. And there's community justice boards. There are places where you can do rehabilitation with victims and defendants. Absolutely. There's a menagerie of options for us to pursue. But first and foremost, I have to get them into the system to have some kind of impact, because you really want to make sure you help the community out, including the defendants. And so how we treat people and how we get them in, because we've got, there's two victims. We have a victim, usually a victim of a crime, and then we have the community as a victim and the businesses in two. And so this is a multi-level, but there's a bunch of different options we have available to us.
How about the way Laura Conover is running the office as the chief administrator of the office? What do you see there that you would perhaps change?
Well, I don't know if you know this, Bill, but I think Pinell County has more prosecutors now than Pima County does, and they've got half the population. And so we've got a loss. We've got a bleeding out of a victim. The first thing you need to do is put the tourniquet on to stop this from happening. I think there are currently 31 felony prosecutors in that office, and crime is up. And so these fewer prosecutors now have more cases. And most cases come, those victims, that's the lowest point, the worst point in their life. And now your prosecutor is overworked, has got some experience issues. And so your first job is recruit, and maintain. And the other issue is, in the meantime, and this is something that she has no experience on, meantime, pick up a file and go to court yourself, because we've got serious cases pending. And, you know, I'm not an activist. I am a prosecutor. This is the county attorney's office. And my job here is to hold people accountable. And if I've got trials and serious offenders on play, I need to pick up, if I don't have the people for it, I'm a prosecutor at heart. Pick up a file and go to court and stand up and say, I represent the state, I represent the people of Pima County, and I'm going to prosecute this case. And so that's what's missing from this office.
Going back to the recruitment, Pinell County, I understand, is just basically kind of outbidding. They're spending more. They're recruiting and they're cherry-picking Ms. Conover's office. So how are you going to change that? How would your recruiting be different than what Laura Conover is doing?
I think, Bill, you can probably attest to this. We pick jobs, usually we pick jobs that we enjoy. We pick jobs when we wake up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, we want to go to work and have a meaningful. So a lot of people leave offices or work, not because of pay, but because of the morale in the office. And so if you change the morale in the office, you change the philosophy in the office, if people have a real want to do the job they do, they're not going to want to commute to Florence. They're going to want to stay here in Pima County and make a difference in the places they live. And I think most of those prosecutors would want to make a difference in the place they live. And so you bring people back the best you can. I mean, it's like I said, it's a bleeding out of a patient. Put a tourniquet on and we have to reassess what we do. I mean, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think they're losing another prosecutor this week or next week. And so you've got yourself a problem in the office.
All right. We're speaking with Mike Jetty. Mike is a Democrat who is challenging Laura Conover. So there will be a primary election. So far, in the filing deadline, Mike, I believe it's April 1st. I do not think there is a Republican that has thrown his or her hat into the ring, to use a political cliche. Is that correct?
That's correct. Whoever wins.
So whoever wins basically is going to be the Pima County attorney.
Correct.
Any final thoughts, Mike, before we let you go? What would you like our listeners to know about you?
I would encourage everyone to go to my website to get a little flavor of who I am, MikeJetty.com. I have been a career prosecutor, worked at the county, state, and federal levels. I prosecuted cases from burglary all the way up to large white-collar crimes, criminal enterprises, cartel members. And so I come to this job, I come to this campaign with some significant experience, which is different than Ms. Conover. And so I want the voters to know that this is a black and white issue here. There's a difference between these two candidates. Now, I'm a Democrat. I believe in universal health care. I believe in pro-choice. I will never prosecute a woman, doctor, husband, boyfriend for any choice on terminating a pregnancy, not once. And so these are, we all agree with those core concepts, but there's a difference between a prosecutor and an activist. And I'm a prosecutor, and this is what the job needs as a prosecutor.
All right, Mike Jetty, thanks for coming in, Mike.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right. And again, your website is?
MikeJetty.com. Mike, M-I-K-E-J-E-T-T-E.
Okay. I bet people mispronounce your name all the time.
All the time. So that's, but I, you did it well this time, though.
I know. Yeah, because I did screw up when Laura was with us a couple of weeks ago. I did mispronounce your name. Sorry about that. Anyway.
No worries.
All right. We'll take a break right here. We'll be talking with our historian, Ken Scoville, about historic designation of the University of Arizona Farm on Campbell. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show doing the Tuesday thing. We're here Monday through Friday at 12:04 until 1 o'clock. And one of our great sponsors, they're all great sponsors. I only endorse operations that I believe in. And one of them is a visit over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Before you hop in the car or truck or the motorcycle, for that matter, jump on the motorcycle and do the trip over to Silver City. It's only about a three-hour drive. I always suggest people take a look at their website. Great starting point, Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org. And there they will tempt you with great activities, a lot of outdoor recreation, even indoor. The museum that has the incredible Mimbrace pottery at Western New Mexico University is there in historic Silver City. Speaking of history, our historian friend, one of our contributors, we have two dozen regular contributors to the program. So proud of these people. Our contributor on history is Ken Scoville, and he joins us now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine today. Lots of stuff going on, but I'm fine.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. The Campus Agricultural Center, known as around Tucson as the UA Farm on Campbell, officially now has made the National Register after a two-month nominating process. This is that area. Now, there's nine historic buildings and adjacent farm fields. I love going by there on West North Campbell. It just makes me feel like I'm out in the country when I see the sheep or the cattle. That's at East Roger Road. What's your take on this, Ken? I know it's been a long time coming.
Well, I was just trying to think about how the National Register designation is good news from a lot of different perspectives, but it tends to be confused by a lot of people in that it announces that this has historic significance, that it's, maybe has architectural history or cultural significance, and the farm certainly has significance because the University of Arizona is a land-grant institution. And the real first focus was to have a College of Agriculture. And so the acquisition of that farm property, which was along the floodplain farm corridor of the Rito, that it was, I think it was about 1909 that was purchased by the U of A. But anyway, over the years and all these things, and there's been lots of pressure, especially get into modern times, this is a huge parcel of land, very centrally located, close to the foothills, close to the University of Arizona downtown. There'd always been concerns about preservation. And I was involved with the group, and we're still hoping to get a landmark designation. We can talk about that a little bit. But the idea that we've listed about, I think it's not a lot of acreage, maybe 8 or 9 acres and some buildings, it recognizes it and sometimes has some tax availability, but does not really preserve it.
Well, is there protection for it? Could this be still sold off, Ken Scoville?
Oh, sure. it just makes, and how would we say, preservation on all different levels, whether it's a national park or whatever, is always a political process.
Mm-hmm.
And when something is identified on the National Register, that gives it a credibility and a real advocacy point for those of us who might want to save something. My concern is that the University of Arizona, and needless to say, there is a lot going on at the University of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But on this issue, I'm afraid they did this partly because they had actually compromised one of the historic buildings tremendously and not asked the State Historic Preservation Office, or somehow there was a lack of communication. So part of this listing was that they needed to do something because they really impacted one historic building already. But I'm afraid the public and lots of friends that I have, oh, isn't it great that they've protected the farm? Well, no, it's not really protected the farm. They could sell that. They could still tear things down. It would be a big fight. But what we was more concerned about, and part of the reason we wanted the landmark designation, and I still would want the landmark designation, is that because it's a great historic landscape. And those mm-hmm. views of the Catalinas, the open space, the sense of our history, of our a land-grant institution, the University of Arizona, and all those things are constantly on display. Since they've had the new, and I don't know the exact wording of this, but they've got a veterinary medicine program now at the University of Arizona. So I think that's added to the significance and the long-term usage of this.
So tell me something, Ken, about landmark designation. Is that considered among the preservationists as the gold standard? In other words, you can't screw around with a landmark designation.
Yes, but I brought things up, and it's real easy for your listeners to go, boy, this really gets in the weeds, but it does really quickly. But a landmark designation is essentially goes through some of the same kind of guidelines that the National Register. Is it significant? Is it important? But part of what the city landmark says, if such a landmark were to be demolished or significantly altered, it would constitute an irreplaceable loss of the quality and character of Tucson. And obviously the farm does this.
Uh-huh.
So if we got it listed as a landmark, what it means, it doesn't mean, and again, selling this to and the issues of private property ownership and all those other things, that if the UVA still wanted to demolish the buildings and build something else, they could do that. But if they sell a portion of the land, let's say 100 vacant acres or whatever, and a developer buys this, they don't get to just automatically do whatever they want. Now, if somebody else buys this, they have to go to the Tucson-Pima Historical Commission, get an evaluation of what they would do and how does this impact or not impact the historical resources, the historic landscape. So it allows the public to participate, and what you're going to now do with that land, that make sure that it doesn't totally alter the historic significance of the property, where the National Register does not do that at all.
Can you give us an example of a landmark designation that we already have here in Tucson that people might be familiar with?
Sure. If you drive on Speedway and you're going west before you get to Park, on the right side of your street, you see sort of two historic buildings that were both professors' buildings. I think they were the first professors' residences north of Speedway. But you sort of see two buildings squeezed in with a huge, I think it's the College of Business Administration behind it. Mm-hmm. And those are both landmarks.
Okay.
And so those were sort of saved, and the University of Arizona didn't want to save them. But finally, I sort of say it was the shame approach, that these were given to the university. Mm-hmm. How dare you tear them down? They were a gift to the university. And that's how they got the landmark designation.
So the middle does it. Landmark is kind of the top, the best one from a preservationist point of view. The middle one is called the middle of the three levels. What is that?
Well, you have, really, I would say it's sort of in Tucson, we have two rather unique local preservation standards. You always have the National Register, which provides sometimes tax credits, a recognition, and politically makes it a little more difficult to demolish, but we do tear down National Register buildings every day in Tucson. Okay. Then the next local area is that we have areas called historic preservation zones, like Fort Lauderdale, West University, Barrio Viejo, El Presidio. Those were designated with a higher level of preservation based on a backlash to urban renewal in the 1960s. Three wonderful women got involved and started this landmark designation for these zones. Outside of these zones, the actual landmark we just discussed is what will preserve it best.
Mm. So the goal from you and your preservationists would be to get the farm elevated a little bit. Is that correct?
Yes, to the landmark designation. That would still give the community a voice of whatever happens to the farm in the future.
And there was some question about Pablo Solari's chapel at Banner, the Cancer Center. Can you give us a quick update on that?
Sure. And it's a wonderful, very unique and very reflective place for people dealing with different issues. The university, and this is my viewpoint, the university and its bureaucracy thought, oh, we want to move it someplace else and maybe so where people could see it more or appreciate it more, but they were only going to take pieces of it.
Okay.
And it's really an entity that needs to be moved in total. Mm. So, but there's been a hold right now. Finally, the state of Arizona Historic Preservation Office, I think, and other people said, we need to go slow on this. If we're going to relocate it, that's okay, but we need to make sure we keep the integrity of the whole installation.
Yeah. I haven't been there to see it in person, but I know about Solari. I actually interviewed him at one point early in my career, and I know he created this chapel because his wife, like my wife, died of cancer, and he wanted a memorial. So, boy, I sure hope they preserve this in its integrity, because I would myself like to go over and visit there.
Oh, I've seen it a few times, and it's quite nice. And if you've ever been, people have been up in the Phoenix and in Paradise Valley area, they still have the area where the bell foundry, where they make all their bells.
I love the bells.
And it has a wonderful, and it has a wonderful bell installation as part of the chapel.
All right, Ken, always a pleasure. Ken Scoville. Thanks, Ken.
Sure.
All right, on behalf of Ken and John and me, Bill, hope everybody has a great afternoon.